You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
But I like the playoffs just makes me think, oh gosh, the stress of it.
Well, I'm afraid to tell you, Gemma, you're probably going to go for it.
I think.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody. My name's James. Welcome to the Planet FPL Fan View. And I'm delighted to welcome a couple of guests we've not had on this podcast for a very long time. But quite quietly, there's been some very eventful things happening at their club over the last 18 months or so. Let me reintroduce you to our West Bromwich Albion correspondents. It's Gemma and Harrison Eno. How are you both?
Yeah, really good, thanks. Good.
Harrison, for the benefit of the listeners and the viewers, how old are you now, mate?
14 and a half.
My goodness, the whole community remembers you when you were a lot smaller and a lot younger and didn't have an Adam's apple, but it's great to see you again, my friend. I hope you are all well. There's lots to cover off, as I said in the intro there. I didn't realize quite how bad the situation was with the ownership of the football club, and quite what, once you dropped out the league, I think it's kind of out of sight, out of mind for us in the Premier League.
Yeah, but
it was quite bad under this gentleman, Gwakon Lie. Am I pronouncing that correctly, firstly?
I think so, yeah. I never know how to pronounce that first name.
Mr. Lie, maybe.
Yeah.
maybe he was full of lies in the first place, because what I seem to be gathering is that he was probably a bit in over his head in terms of
definitely
looking after the football club. How bad would a protest in terms of trying to move him on?
I mean, they did get quite bad. I was at one game where everybody held up like these placards or like banners, and it was nearly the entire ground because there was a group called Action for Albion that were campaigning to get this guy out because he was slowly destroying our club. And we were looking before Carlos Corbran came in and we had Steve Bruce. I really thought that we were just going to get relegated, League One, we're going to have to sell all our players. We've still got one of the highest wage bills, which we still need to bring down. Yeah. But it was looking really, really desperate. And I was thinking, who's going to buy us? And then when the rumours came out that somebody, I think there were a few that were interested, I just couldn't believe, like, that's one of the best days ever when they announced that this man was going to take us over, Patel. And he has experience in, because with Lai, he had no experience of running a football club at all. There was no communication with the fans, nothing. He never came to the games. I mean, Mr. Patel has been to more games in 3 weeks than Lai did in years. So he just wasn't interested. He lied by nature. He went in with, all of these ideas. And on the very first game I remember going to, he bought everybody a free drink and a pie or something. And everyone was like, oh, this is a nice guy.
Yeah.
But little did we know that he had no experience, and he's taken out loans against the club. We still owe 30 million on one loan. So, yeah, it was pretty desperate.
I understand there's even one loan that he took out of the club for roundabouts 5 million, put into one of his other businesses, which the football club has written off and will not be getting back.
Yeah, well, I think Shilin Patel has paid that one off, the 5 million one off. Yeah.
I understand there were some offers for the club going back a couple of years, a sort of circle roundabouts 100 million just after you'd come back down. Mm-hmm. After the COVID season, it looks like the deal's gone through now for about 60, where Shilin Patel has taken over the club. But that obviously includes he's taking on around about £40 million worth of debts as well,
yeah,
I think.
That's right.
So nearer kind of the 100 million valuation. I take it's a huge relief then, because again, going back to your previous managers and stuff, which we'll come on to in a second, you're not wrong or exaggerating when you say League One was a concern briefly.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, when in the depths of despair, when we, you know, we had Steve Bruce and they should have sacked him at the end of the 22-23 season, he should have gone then. Everybody was really surprised that they kept him on. And then I think they went, they didn't win in eight games or something. We ended up being second from bottom. I mean, it was really, really desperate times. And what's interesting is that I would say at least half of the players are the same players that Carlos Corberan has now, which just tells you what a great manager and motivator he is. And Steve Bruce sent Cedric Kiepre and Alex Moa out on loan. He wasn't interested in either of them. And both of them have been our two most consistent players this season. They've both been amazing.
So arguably that Kiepre is the best player.
Yeah, everyone. Kiepre is a beast and can also play in goal, it would seem, as well. with his cheeky handball the other week. But yeah, he's just been amazing. And we love him. So it just shows you how amazing Carlos Corberan is, really.
Is there any concern about the new owner, Shilin Patel? Because I think when a club is in, jeopardy is probably a bad word, but in dire straits maybe, and it needs picking up off the floor, opportunists can tend to dive in and try and take the football club. Is there anything so far that's given you any reason for concern?
I don't think so. I mean, he speaks really well in interviews. He's got this stake in, I think it's Bologna in Serie A, which he's taken. He's only got, I think, a small stake in it. But they've gone from Serie B to the Champions League places.
They're fourth, haven't they? Yeah.
And he's compared our situation with them. He wants to build us up. I think he's not one of these people who is... I think he's realistic. He knows it's going to take time. I don't necessarily think that we will get promoted this season. It worries me if we do. I don't think we're ready. But I think financially, I think we probably need to. But we're in a much better position now than we've been for years and years. I think there is reason to be really optimistic.
Absolutely. I mean, certainly in comparison to what it was, where this guy had clearly kind of run out of funds and wasn't going to do anything else for the football club. It had to be in a sell position. We've spoken about Reading a lot on our Patreon podcast recently, which is a really, really bad situation. Fortunately, not got that bad for you, but it might have been heading in that direction where you've got an owner who just can't put any more money in. You know, the valuation of the football club's obviously gone down over the last couple of years. That he's selling at what less than what he could have a couple of years ago, for example. Now, Mr. Patel, I've seen a few interviews of his, and he speaks very well.
He does.
The only thing that nags at my brain is, doesn't everybody when they take over?
Yeah,
that's all. Well,
yeah, exactly. I mean, he does a lot of. He's a big philanthropist. He does a lot, like in the medical industry and things like that. They seem like really good people, him and his dad. They seem lovely, and I think he's already really emotionally invested as well, because he's, you know, he's been to a few games. He's even been to QPR.
Well, you've obviously mentioned the visual already, and QPR was an away game as well.
Yeah,
you've mentioned the visual of seeing him there. That is going to speak volumes to you already, when you had an absent owner for the last 7 years or so that was just never there and couldn't be seen. You feel like you lose connection with the club. If someone comes back in right from the very top and starts saying, I'm here now, I'm going to look after you, you must feel a peace of mind now.
And all we asked for is transparency. And that was the biggest thing that was lacking with Lai. No one knew what was going on. They kept this date for these loans to be paid, kept being pushed back and back. Nobody knew what was going on. Whereas from the very beginning, Shilin Patel has, you know, he's got a Twitter account as well, and he tweets not just about the men's team, but about the women's team as well. And I think he is going to be really, really good for the club. I'm feeling positive.
Good. It sounds positive. I'm pleased for you both. Let's take a step back to something less positive, though. When you last came on the podcast, Jim, we'd obviously just had the appointment of Valerian Ismail.
Mm-hmm.
There was quite a bit of excitement about it. He'd done quite well at Barnsley with a very different brand of football.
Yeah.
it didn't go so well. What happened?
No. So I think it, well, one of the most positive things that came out of it was Darnell Furlong discovered that he's got a long throw. That's the the only thing that's come out that's been positive.
This was after you sacked Sam Allardyce, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And he's, Sam Allardyce has also said that he would never, he wished he hadn't have taken the job, which annoyed me, but, you know, moving on. Yeah, Ishmael, it was like high pressing. It was intense. I think he ran the players into the ground. And I think other teams very quickly worked out our style of play, and he didn't have any other tactics to play with at all. So the great thing about Carlos is that if he sees something isn't working, he's the first person to haul someone off or change the system or whatever. Ishmael, he used to change his subs at 65 minutes every single game, the same three every single game. He had
fantasy managers would love that. At least you know you're getting the 2 points.
You'd know in advance exactly who's taking off, exactly who's putting on, and he had no other idea. And he's gone to all these other places and it hasn't worked out. Hasn't worked out at Watford. It was really positive, but it very, very quickly. We saw that, you know, this isn't going to work, and I don't think the players liked him either.
Yeah.
So the reaction when Steve Bruce was appointed was,
I think at that point it was kind of like, oh well, we've had a merry-go-round of these older managers. We've had Allardyce, we've had Pardew, and you know, and that now it was Steve Bruce. I was thinking, here we go again, but we'll go with it. I thought, well, he's experienced. I think he knows what he's doing. But the vibe at the club was just horrendous. And yeah, they were bad times, especially in that first season when he took over. I think we were at a shout at the playoffs until actually later on than even I thought. But then the following season, when they appointed Corbran, we were just abysmal. It's so interesting because it's Jed Wallace, it's John Swift, it's Brandon Thomas Asante, you know, it's Bartley, it's Palmer, it's the same players. But he just didn't have a clue. I think his time was up.
I suppose the thinking with Bruce was he's obviously got so many clubs out of the league.
Yeah.
Probably didn't help that he'd managed a few of your rivals in the nearby area as well. Probably didn't help in the same way it didn't help that he'd done Sunderland before Newcastle, despite being a Newcastle fan supposedly as well. The media press around him after the Newcastle job wasn't helped by Eddie Howe coming in and doing really well from the start. Bruce ends up at your place. Sure, he knows how to get out of the league, but you've got an owner that the fans want out, and now they've got a manager they've got no confidence in, just been appointed as well. Recipe for disaster, really.
Yeah, it was bad times. I mean, that's when I thought, when we were in the relegation zone and, you know, all of these things behind the scenes, I genuinely thought that we're going to go down to League One. I think I'd even resign myself to it. And then...
Were you still going at the time? Or were you not going to as many games, the two of you?
No, we're not season ticket holders, but we still go as much as we can. But then up rocked the Messiah, Carlos Corbran.
Coming in, what's so good about him? Because people will know, obviously, he got to the Huddersfield to the playoff final, lost to Nottingham Forest in that final for an own goal. Wasn't the best final, but it was a remarkable achievement to get Huddersfield to that point.
And just look what's happened to them since he left.
Yeah, well, he walked out of there afterwards, didn't he? It was like there was a difference of opinion in terms of the direction of the club. I think he obviously wanted to kick it on after what he'd achieved that year. Couldn't. He's ended up at your place and obviously has kicked on with yourselves. He's now 18 months in charge, which feels like quite a long time for a championship manager without a promotion or anything like that, actually.
Top five longest managers.
But I take it it's happy camp now and everyone's behind him. What's so good about him?
You've got this feeling of real togetherness. I think under Steve Bruce, it just seemed like it was all negative. And like the vibes into the crowd, it was now it just feels like everybody is pulled together. And like when they took over, I think we won 10 out of 13 or something ridiculous, bearing in mind that this is some, we were second from bottom. And I think he lost his first game against Sheffield United. And I think that was probably a good thing because it showed him exactly what he was dealing with. And then we were bottom of the league, you know, and I thought, well, I didn't know much about this guy. I knew that he'd been, you know, taken Huddersfield to the playoff final, but I didn't know much about him. And then all of a sudden, we just went on this amazing run. And it was a little bit like Middlesbrough were doing it at the time as well. And we were just surging up the league and winning and winning and winning. Just thought, what has happened? I don't think I can even explain what had happened. I think the players really want to play for him. I think he's an amazing motivator. Yeah. He's a really great guy. I think his attention to detail, I think apparently every week he does one-on-one with every single player in training. So I think his attention to detail must be huge. And when he was under Bielsa at Leeds, I think Bielsa said that he trusted Carlos's opinion more than his own. So it just shows how a talent that he is. And he can, if a game is going bad, he can change things around. And at the moment, we're basically playing with no striker. We don't have DK, unfortunately, has got another really serious injury.
8-9 months or so, isn't
it? Madger has got a serious injury. Brandis Thomas Santos only just coming back. And that should be, you know, bad times, but he's made it work. So we've got our favourite. Well, we've got Mikey Johnston on the left wing. You've got Tom Fellows on the right wing. You've got Jed Wallace playing wherever he wants to.
And they just, 9 in the championship. Is
yeah,
that what
and,
you're
they,
saying?
And they yeah. just they just swap places. Like all of a sudden, you'll look over and oh, Johnston's over on our side, and they just swap places. They must spend so much time in training, going over that sort of thing. They, you know, it's the fluid football, as they call it. If somebody moves, someone else is filling in, and they're, it's just amazing to watch, really.
Yeah. If I say, go on, Harrison, go on.
Oh, it's weird because we haven't really seen like a proper winger since like Matheus Pereira and Dean Garner at that lockdown season. And we went to Bristol a couple of days ago, and when we saw Tom Fellows and Mikey Johnson like take on defenders, you don't really see that like championship wingers really do, except for like Somerville, Mavidi, who are like the top players in the championship right now. And it's just a bit weird seeing like someone be able to cut in and then swing it in to like the top right, and we're not really expecting that. Like Mikey Johnson, when we got on from Celtic, we were like, he's going to be awful because Celtic fans
you're welcome to have him.
And the impact what Tom Ferris and him have had on the club so far, I think they've been amazing. And especially how young they are, so as well, like 19 and 23, I've still got a lot.
Can't beat a good offensive wide player who wants to take the opposition on and is really directing their play and wants to go forwards, whether that's hitting the byline or coming inside, as many of them do these days. Like that's the sort of stuff that gets you off your feet. It's going to help the vibe and the atmosphere around the stadium as well. I want to come back to your point, because obviously you said he worked with Bielsa, Jebbers. A few would have picked up on that and gone, so is this like Madness Leeds? That you don't play like Madness Leeds, do you?
No, we don't, because we've conceded a few goals recently, but if you look at our defensive record, I think we've kept more clean sheets than anybody in the championship. So I think he tries to keep it more tight than I would say Leeds would. but I think we're in the form table, we're third. I think Leeds are top, Ipswich, and then us. So it's going to be very interesting. Like, I think I'm in denial at the moment. I'm just having a lovely time thinking, oh, yeah, if we make the playoffs, it would be nice. But the playoffs just makes me think, oh, gosh, the stress of it.
Well, I'm afraid to tell you, Gemma, you're probably going to go for it.
I think, yeah, at least we're not going to be playing Villa this time. So that was really, really bad.
Oh, gosh. They won a penalties at your place, didn't they?
They did, yeah.
Yeah. Who would you compare yourself to at the moment in terms of a Premier League team? I'm not saying in terms of the quality necessarily, but in terms of style, what would you say you're like in terms of a style of a team? Are you like possession orientated, like a Manchester City? Are you more like a kind of go for it Tottenham? Or
maybe we're a bit of over Brighton.
Oh, that will intrigue me.
Maybe.
Like, we do have quite a lot of possession, and they don't start games really quickly. Like, they kind of ease their way into it. I mean, the game, what was the game when we were 1-0 down the other week? That was Huddersfield, yeah. It was like it was the worst of Albion and the best of Albion. That first half was one of the worst I've ever seen. I don't know what Corbrand said in the team talk at half time, but he must have given them a rocket, because then they've scored four goals in the second half and they were amazing.
So if you made it up, we'd enjoy you, right?
I think so, yeah. I think you would, yeah. I'd like to think that we wouldn't get hammered every week. I'd like to think that we'd be, I mean, Burnley fans, but they're pretty dreadful, aren't they, in comparison to teams.
This is a Burnley you pissed the league that you're in now last season.
Yeah, yeah.
They destroyed the championship.
They did.
I don't know what's happened to them.
Yeah. I don't know whether Vincent Kompany's used to that sort of, you know, in the trenches down the bottom.
Well, would Carlos Corbahan?
Well, we shall see.
Well, it would be good to see. But I guess that's part of the question at the moment, because the three teams who come up with respect have been quite weak. And I said to you off camera before we started, Burnley, Jack talked about it on Clash of Correspondents this week. Bought too many young players, not enough in experience. They spent it badly. Luton and Sheffield United couldn't spend at all.
No.
There's now the distance. It's going to be a big narrative, isn't it? If a club like you, who's been quite restricted financially over the last couple of years, comes up, they're doomed. And even more so if you come up with, say, two powerful clubs like Leeds and Leicester at the same time, it's going to look like a tough year to come up, isn't it? Is that part of what you meant when you said, I'm not sure we're ready?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of players out of contract at the end of the season. And I think a lot of them, like people like Bartley, I think is on massive wages. I think Adam Reach apparently is on 40 grand a week, which is insane. Kiprae is out of contract. Peters. So you've got Chalobah. You've got a lot that I think will go. And then it's just who comes in to replace them. Although a lot of these players are probably squad players. Matt Phillips is another one that's out of contract, but he's been with us a long time. I think Mowat might be as well. It's like, who do you get in to replace them? And I think why we're doing so well is we have the perfect mix of experienced players like Jed Wallace and Bartley. And then you've got your younger kids like Tom Fellows that are, you know, exciting. And even people like Dean Garner has been around a while and is experienced. You've got that good mix of players. But I don't know. I mean, luckily, because I thought we were going to have to sell a lot of our players even in January.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen. The only one that we've had to sell is Dara O'Shea, and he's had a terrible time at Burnley.
He nearly scored a great goal at the weekend.
Yeah.
In the wrong net.
Maybe we should stay at the Albion, I don't know. But
you had to take the money, didn't you?
Yeah, we had to sell him. Yeah.
That 6 million was equated to the loan that came out, right?
Yeah,
There's a lot of names in the squad currently who will be familiar to people. You've already mentioned sort of like Furlong, Eric Peters, people be more familiar with, sort of Burnley, Connor Townsend. Our mate OK came back after a spell away.
Yeah.
Grady Dean Garner, people remember. You mentioned people who weren't in the team at the weekend, like Cole Bartley, Nathaniel Chalobah's at the club. There'll be a lot on the outside going. I know a lot of these players, and they weren't good enough for the Premier League last time. Will they be now? I guess you're probably going to have an overhaul of the squad either way in the summer, which I guess you can do now with the new owner.
Yeah. And I think it would be easier to do that in the Championship than in the Premier League. It'd be easier to, you know, be able to get people in. And I'd like to think, so if we don't go up, because ultimately, I know it's a cliche, but it is a lottery, isn't it? The playoffs, they are. I don't think many people expected Luton to be the one that went through the playoffs last season.
No.
So it could, you know, it could be any of us. I mean, it could be Leicester. I can't believe that. I know they've got games in hand, but I can't believe that they are in danger of dropping into the playoffs.
Well, well, this is psychological now, because Leicester were so far clear. I saw a statistic at the start of the week. It wasn't Leeds that were second, but they were at one point 19 points clear of Leeds.
Yeah.
I think Leeds have now gone above them on goal difference.
Yeah.
They're both on 82 points. Leicester do have that game in hand. The game in hand is Southampton at home, though.
Right. So it's
by no means a gimme. No. Southampton, suddenly, if they won that, because they've got a game in hand on Leicester as well, are 9 points behind Leicester in fourth. If Southampton won that and then won the other game in hand, which is the Preston game that was postponed because of the fire at St Mary's, then they're only 3 points behind Leicester. Yeah. And in between that is Ipswich. You've had a phenomenal season.
Yeah.
We're only 1 point behind. How strong do you see these teams, and how do you see that playing out, the top four?
I think Leeds will definitely be in the top two. I just think they're just too powerful, and like they're attacking football and things. Who do you think is going to make the top two, Harrison?
I'd like to say Ipswich, but They're a bit on and off. At the start of the season, they're winning basically every single game.
Mm.
And then they lose some, and then they win some. It's a bit different, but they've just won 6-0.
They've been good recently, though. Yeah. I think everybody goes through a bad patch, don't they?
And they've lost five. That's remarkable.
Yeah.
Just promoted.
Yeah. I think it will be Leicester. I think Leicester will win those games. I think Leicester will be top, Leeds will be second.
Yeah.
Which then leaves Ipswich and Southampton in the playoffs. Now,
with yourselves.
I worry. So we haven't lost to Ipswich. I know it doesn't work like this, but we haven't lost to Ipswich. We haven't beaten Southampton. We have beaten Ipswich. We have beaten Norwich.
Yeah.
We have beaten Hull. So Southampton are the ones that I think we find a bit tricky, like their style of play.
God, they've won us 2-0 and 2-1 win.
Yeah, they beat us both. And although we played really well at St Mary's, that was one of our best performances, although we lost.
Yeah.
But we weren't good at home against them.
You're kind of in an awkward position, really, in the sense it's a failure from here if you don't reach the playoffs, basically. For those who don't know, you're on 66 points. So I think it's fair to say that you're not going to get automatic promotion here. Even if you won every game left, I don't think it would be a certainty. No. And I think I know you've got 8 games left. So no, I don't even think that'd be enough if you won all 8 games. You're 16 points behind Leicester in second and they played a game fewer. So that's not realistic with 8 games to go, quite clearly. But you're also 8 points clear of Hull in seventh. Hull do have a game in hand, as the Coventry are a further point behind. You're on 66 points, though. And I let a glance at your fixtures. And I don't think you should have too many problems in the running.
We've got to play a lot of teams that are near the bottom or mid-table. I don't think there's anybody that is like in and around us. I think we play Leicester. I mean, that could be a massive game, not just for us, but for them. Sure. Huge. I think it's the third game from the end of the season. And then we've got Watford. Who else have we got? Sheffield Wednesday. I mean, they'll be fighting for their lives.
You've still got to play Rotherham.
Rotherham, I mean, Rotherham fans, but they're pretty dreadful.
Yeah.
Sunderland. Millwall.
It's a very winnable set of fixtures, my point. I can't see you wetting the bed, basically, and falling out of those playoff positions.
No.
But you're also not going to do better than it. It's difficult to even foresee you probably catching Southampton, or you're seven behind, because they've got 2 games in hand as well. Therefore, you almost know now you're probably going to go into a playoffs with the first leg at home in the semi-final, and you've basically got a two-month build to it now. That's how it feels.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean this period doesn't matter, because obviously if you do terrible, then you will fall out. But as long as you maintain some form of consistency, and considering how you're playing, shouldn't be a problem. But then to raise for your top level at the end, and when it matters, that might be tough.
Yeah.
Because you won't have played under that pressure for a while.
No, that's true. I think a lot is going to depend on injuries as well. If Michael Johnston gets an injury, or Fellows or Wallace, or you know, that puts a different perspective on things. But yeah, I can't I'm in touch wood. I can't see us suddenly falling away now. I don't know why we would. I think, like I said before, I think the togetherness of the squad and things, I think that will just carry us through. I think they're determined. And I think Carlos is determined as well. But you'd like to think that there'd be some kind of plan either way of what's going to happen behind the scenes. But it will be pretty difficult if we do go up.
Challenging, though, as much as the ownership change is obviously a positive.
Yeah.
He won't have had, like, our end of season goals or, you know, if we finish here, this is what we do next summer, this is what we got to spend. Yeah. He's coming in looking at it all from new, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you go up via the playoffs, then you go end up going up late. The mm-hmm. Championship playoff final could even move back a week in the unlikely event that Coventry make the FA Cup final and the Championship playoff final because they're on the same weekend coming.
Yeah, that's mad.
So that would get moved to after the Champions League final. In that circumstance, if you had Coventry in a playoff final, for example, which isn't impossible, you definitely could both end up in the playoffs. I'm interested to get your opinion again on the top two, Leeds, Leicester. If you both think that's who will come up, do you think they would stay up?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do think they'll both stay up.
Do you agree with that, Harrison?
It's hard to predict, really, especially with how Burnley dominated the league and then going to the Premier League and then getting dominated by the Premier League and probably getting straight back down. It's hard to really get your mind around because we didn't realise Luton were going to do so good coming back up either. They've really fought. They've lost a lot, but they've also like put fight to it, like losing 4-3 to Arsenal. I still wasn't expecting to score three goals against Arsenal. But it's hard, really, but I think they would stay up, but Leeds are a bit funny with relegation going near there, so I don't know. But I think they'll both stay up.
They'll be stronger than what's gone up this year, though, wouldn't they? Almost certainly.
I mean, Leeds manager's Farker, isn't it?
Yes, they're on an incredible run as well.
Yeah, I mean, he when he was manager of Norwich, they absolutely blew the championship away, didn't they? They won it. And then when Norwich went up, they were crap. And he was in charge, so it'd be interesting to see him having another go at it because they were being battered.
Yeah,
Norwich were, and he was the manager, so it would be interesting to see what happens. I think they would. I'm going to go. Yeah, I mean, I've got a soft spot for Enzo Maresca because I saw him play as a player for Albion. But
I didn't realise he played for you.
He did. Yeah, he was a young kid. I was very young myself when I played. And then he went back to Italy. But yeah, he had a little spell at the Albion and he was a magician back then.
Yeah, they'll probably be tactically really interested in the Premier League because they do a lot of the moving the fullback into midfield and stuff like that. Yeah. I actually caught the end of the game when you played them.
Yeah.
When Harry Winks got the winner at the end.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
What was that?
Oh, my. It was lost. A little bit
you had a long throw and you lost.
Yeah, it was a little bit like the Man United game at the weekend when all of a sudden
counter at their death,
somebody just kick him. That's what I was like, you know, someone kick him, take him down. It was exactly the same against Leicester. It wasn't even a corner. You're right. It was a long throw. And we'd scored near the end to make it 1-1. So well done. We've got a point against Leicester. And then everybody goes forward for this long throw and then they're on a breakaway. But Malumbi, I mean, normally he gets yellow cards for fun. And I don't understand why he didn't just kick the guy.
They also, they seemed in on a J as well. They seemed in on a J into the box because they know he's always the last defender because of his pace and his like his strength.
Yeah.
And they seemed on a J coming into the box and the second they kicked it out, they just ran for it.
Yeah. I mean, those 3 points might be very valuable to Leicester at the end of the season.
Mm. I think Harry Winks thought he missed as well, by the way.
I thought he'd finish
from him.
Yeah, it was close.
There's a few players in the squad I want to ask you about, perhaps people might be a little less familiar with. I want to ask you about the goalkeeper, Alex Palmer.
Oh, yes.
How good is he?
He's very good. I mean, he's having a little tiny bit of a wobble at the moment. Some people are getting on his back because there have been a couple of hairy moments here and there. But he's amazing. He actually went to my mum's play group, so she knows him really, really well. but I think he's really good. And that actually, he got an injury last season, and that coincided with our really bad run. So I don't think Josh Griffiths is really up to it.
Yeah, Button in goal. And
yeah, Button conceded, before that.
He conceded 18 goals with 23 shots on target. It was one of the worst starts ever done by a Championship goalkeeper.
So as soon as Alex Palmer came in, actually, that's when things started to change a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they have a lot of confidence in the defenders. Like he saved a penalty recently. I've seen him save multiple one-on-ones. You would back him because he's huge and he makes himself really big. Just every so often, he'll have a bit of a mad moment.
Good enough for the Premier League?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Luton wanted him in January. We thought we were going to lose him to Luton.
Yeah,
that's part why I asked. I knew there was serious interest from Luton. Yeah, I think especially last summer, I think, before they ended up going with Kaminsky.
Yeah, we thought it was a done deal, really. And then it transpired that he was going to stay. But yeah, I think he is, yeah.
Who else in that squad would you say is Premier League ready? Not the experienced ones that we've seen playing it, like Townsend, for example. Some of the names who have done well for you, some of the names you've mentioned. Who do you think, if we go up, they're good enough to play for us next year?
I mean, can I say Yakuzlu? Because he's one that's already played.
He's okay.
He's okay, yeah.
And we're all weak.
To be honest, what do you think? Who comes to mind? See, this is where I really struggle, James. I don't think we're ready. There's nobody that really comes to mind.
I think a lot of our players now, we've got a few young players, but I feel like the reason why we love Carlos Corbrand is because all of his transfers have all been free transfers, like John Swift, Jeb Wallace, even Wayman scoring 2 goals in his first start.
Championship players, aren't they? Amazing.
This is part why I ask,
experience.
And they've been in there for ages, yeah.
They're not, I don't think they're Premier League. I think
that's okay, Gemma. No one wants you to lie and say, we'll go up and finish eighth. Like, no one's expecting that.
No, I don't. So that really worries me. So I know that we need to go up because that 100 million or whatever they say it is huge, would be massive to the club.
Mm-hmm.
So is it worth, I mean, because our parachute payments have stopped, you see, now. Is it worth getting promoted and then being relegated and then you get the parachute payments again, don't you?
Yeah, the answer is yes. Unfortunately, it's a really shitty question, a shitty answer. But yes, you're better off having the money.
Yeah, having a...
Reality. The closer you stay to them parachute payments, the more likely you are to come back. I mean, we've spoken about the weaknesses of the three that went up last year.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be difficult for Sheffield United and Luton, but this will help them. And to be honest, Burnley will probably come back, I think.
Yeah, I think
because they'll be managed correctly from the top through the club. They did it last time. They'll probably do it again. The inexperience that squad's got in the Premier League will benefit next year in the Championship, you would think. I think that's part why they've kept company.
That's why you've got Leicester, Leeds and Southampton all in the top, haven't you? They're the same ones.
I mean, that's probably, in terms of Premier League experience, near enough the largest three that's gone down
usually, I think, in the last
10 years or so, anyway.
You get one that drops off and is like mid-table. Yeah. I mean, you just look at the teams like Stoke, who, I mean, they're in real danger of being relegated this season to League One. And that's where I thought, you know, we were headed. You just don't know. I think we need to get promoted, don't we? This is what you're telling me.
This Championship season is probably one of the best.
Yeah.
If I said to you now, right, you're gonna get promoted, but it's a guaranteed relegation, would you rather do it or not do it?
I'd rather do it. I'd love
it. I think do it, yeah. Do it.
Even though you know you could have another really good season next year and you might just do it next year and be in a stronger position to stay.
Yeah,
I would like us to go up, and just give it a go, see what happens, and then if we get relegated, hopefully we'd be in a position to go straight back up. So this is it, isn't it? This is why we love football. I love the Championship, but especially this year, it's been amazing. Yeah. And if you look at who's close to the playoffs and who's close to going down, the points difference is mad. Like, it could be one of like eight different teams.
I think it was a Bristol City fan what came up to us and speaking to us, and he said we're 9 points away from the playoffs and 9 points away from relegation.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is one of the most insane championship seasons we've ever seen, ever.
It, yeah. It always feels bonkers. I don't know if it's different when you're on the inside of it. From the outside, every now and again, you glance at championships, haven't you? Yes, something bonkers. There was, last year, Blackburn were on the verge of promotion at one stage, and they were second after about 25 games or something. They had a minus goal difference.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
There's always something bonkers in that league. Harrison, I'm going to pull you up. John, you mentioned John Swift. I just keen to ask on him because he was so highly rated as a youngster at Reading. Has that stalled his career?
I don't know, really. He has been bit at the baggies quite a lot. He has shown he's come back from injury recently, and I think it was October, and he scored 6 goals in 9 games. Like, he scored a couple. He scored like some screamers. He scored one against Birmingham, I mean, which then we lost 3-1. But he has been good, but he can be very inconsistent as well. He's quite a slow player, and since changing our style and our Wallace Johnson fellows being quite quick players, Swift is not even 30 yet, but he's still playing like he's over 30. And it makes you think he has got experience, but he's still like 28. He should be a bit more quicker on the ball. He should be a lot more. But he's good with possession. He's good with like turning, but he does lose the ball a lot.
Yeah, he does. He loses
the ball a lot.
He's not an automatic pick now.
I can see that.
He's on the bench.
He's been replaced.
I'll tell you what's been interesting, James, was the Sarmiento thing.
Started much, has he?
So we had Sarmiento from Brighton for the first half of the season. And then in January, we suddenly heard that he was going back to Brighton, and he was quite good. He was you know typical. He's South American, isn't he? Although he speaks
he's from Ecuador.
Yeah, and like he was a tricky player. He scored a couple of like impressive goals, but I don't think Carlos Corberan rated him at all. So it transpired that Carlos had sent him back, not that they'd recalled him. Because now he's ended up at Ipswich. And interestingly, he's not a starter for them either. But because we sent him back, that allowed us to get Mikey Johnston in.
And it also allowed to be able to be a better player.
And actually, the Phillips injury has worked in these guys' favour because they're the only wingers that we really have. So, and they've both been amazing, but we've had to play them. It would be interesting if Sarmiento would have stayed, but yeah, I think Carlos is. I think he's quite brutal in that way as well. Yeah. If he doesn't think you're good enough, you're out.
It's Mikey Johnston.
Yeah,
he's got a few weldies, hasn't he?
Oh, nearly every single one.
Wasn't there a stat he scored his first 4 shots?
Yeah,
for the club.
He's mad. He's Harrison won't remember this player because he wasn't even born, but he reminds me of Jason Kumas. Remember Jason Kumas?
Very talented player, yeah.
Very talented. So he
remember at Tranmere, a lot of people remember him there.
He drives. He's a bit like and Sessegnon that we used to have.
Can I just say I feel sick that Harrison doesn't know who that is?
I know, yeah. Like he's one of these players that will just drive through everybody, and you don't see players really doing that so much these days. Not for Albion anyway, but he'll just drive at these players, take people on, meg somebody, and all of a sudden he's bent it into the top corner from like 25 yards out.
He took on 4 players and got a pass every single
one. And you think he's not going to score. And then he does. And we've said he's having his own goal of the season competition with himself. So
I saw bits of the game at QPR. He actually clung on in the end of that game.
We weren't great against QPR.
We didn't win that, which is absolutely.
He got a super goal, which I was prompted by one of your tweets, actually, Gemma. So have a look at this.
Yeah.
Before we finish up, I want to touch on the Wolves game. I don't want to bring it down and talk about the result or anything like that, but I do want to talk about what happened in the stadium. I know neither of you were there that day. I've been to the Hawthorns a number of times. It's always felt like a friendly away place to go, no problems. And I realise there's obviously a huge rivalry with Wolves.
Yeah.
What's your reflection on that now, a couple of months ago, with what happened in the Wolves game? For those who don't know, there was some skirmishing, I think it's fair to say, in a couple of different areas of the ground, and the game got paused for half hour. That's how bad it was. Yeah. That's very uncommon to happen in this
country.
It
doesn't happen, yeah. I was really shocked. I was away in Edinburgh, so I was kind of following it on my phone. I just couldn't believe that they had to stop the game. Like, that's just unheard of, really, in this country for that to happen. I think there were a few things at play here. So I don't think people actually realise what the hatred between Albion and Wolves, how... So, I mean, because Man United and Liverpool were playing at the weekend, I think there was a tweet, maybe it was from Sky Sports or something, and they said, which of these is the biggest rivalry? And there were 10 games, and Albion Wolves wasn't even on there. So I don't think people realise the hatred between these two clubs. They hadn't played in front of fans for like eight years.
Was it 8 years?
Yeah,
I think.
So something. So, and we also at home, our record at home against them, I don't think they'd beaten us at the Hawthorns for something like 20 years, something ridiculous.
It was 25 years exactly.
Yeah.
You can still say that for league games. Just
you can see, games. Yeah, they happen. That's true. Yeah. So I think this was all building up. I think what had happened was, and this is completely at the Albion fans' fault if they did this, is that because there were Wolves fans in the Albion end, which is why it kicked off so badly. Now, at the Albion, you have to have a membership account in order to buy a ticket. The only thing I can think of is that some people sold their seats to Wolves fans, and that's why. And then they were celebrating, I think it was the second goal, and then it all just absolutely kicked off. But there's no excuse for the scenes that were witnessed that day.
I had a theory, which I've never had confirmed or denied because I've not asked a West Brom fan, but I'm about to. The incident that was really bad originally, because we know that on the corner from where you look when you're watching the game on the TV, on the far right hand corner, you've got obviously the away fans are right next to the home fans on that side and make quite a bit of noise. But the real problem kicked off in the complete opposite corner
of
the ground, which is in the corner near your home end, which is near, I forget the name of the stand where the players come out, but it's quite small.
It
is a small end with respect. And I wondered if there might have been players and family from Wolves seated there, and if that was a designated area. Because I was thinking, where at the Hawthorns would, if you're a Wolves player, it might be that it was insisted to be an away end. But if you had executives there or anything, where would they sit in the ground? And I figured it must be on that side somewhere.
Yeah, they would be. And I think because people like Bartley, I remember seeing the pictures of him carrying his children.
That's right, with the family.
So it must have been in that corner. You're right, in the Halfords Lane, in the corner. That's where the Albion players, their families sit there. So you could be right. It could be.
That as well. Yeah, correct. Exactly what you said about Cole Bartley. It was kind of a harrowing image, actually, to see him concerned and stuff.
Yeah.
He wasn't the only one. And it made me think that, had it kicked off with players' kind of family and friends who'd got tickets in that area?
Yeah.
And so therefore might not have been through the fan accounts through West Brom. I wondered. I didn't know if you'd know, if you'd been to enough times you'd notice that might be a thing there.
I don't know. I think there were other areas, though, as well. It wasn't just that corner, although that was the main part that kicked off the biggest. But I think there were other areas as well. But it was, it was very unsavoury scenes. And it's not, it's not our football club. It's not representative of Albion. We're a family club, ultimately. And like you say, people... I've been to a lot of away grounds where you aren't allowed into certain pubs and things like that because they only have... whereas it's not like that around the Albion. If you go to the Vine, half the pub is away fans and we're very welcoming. So, but it was Wolves and...
Fans wouldn't have been welcome.
Wolves fans were not welcome.
Maybe I'll see you both in the Vine in August. You never know. We could maybe make that happen. Just a note for the police as well. 11:45 kickoff. Didn't matter.
No, it didn't.
It's going to go.
Everything. Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard of an 11:45 kickoff.
No, that's used to.
That tells you everything you need to know.
I
Like
used
the
to
police knew what was coming.
this one you definitely won't remember, Harrison, because it's before you was even born. But the
Yeah.
first Saturday before we had the 12:45s, which is now the 12:30 kickoffs, it used to be 11:15 on a
Really?
Saturday morning in the Premier League. Yeah, when they wanted to show one, if they wanted a game on a Sunday and the team was playing the Champions League on a Tuesday, normally like 11:15 on a Saturday.
Okay.
But yeah, that's not a game kicking off before 12 hasn't happened, I don't think, for quite some
Not a
time.
long, no, a
And
long time.
it still went off,
It still did, yeah.
unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully, for the sake of both sets of fans there, that's kind of, it's been 8 years, it's cooled off. But I
Hopefully.
suspect it's only going to intensify the rivalry when the two clubs play again, isn't
Yeah,
it?
it will do, that's
Would
true, yeah.
it make you think twice of going to that fixture?
Yeah, I think so. I think it might do. I know a lot of people also, because then I think the following weekend we played Birmingham, and people were worried about that kind of thing happening
Yeah.
again. But I mean, I'd like to think that that was a one-off incident. Nothing like that has ever happened with Albion and Wolves before, and we've played them so many times. We played them in the playoffs 1 year, and it was nothing like that. So I like to think that it won't happen again.
It never happens in England, really, as well. It's more like a foreign, like, thing to do. Like, a lot of fans, like, starting to fight each other. And you weren't really expecting it at all. Like, it was meant to be like a Wolves versus West Brom big rivalry. We're back. It's been 8 years. It's been 8 years. Let's start a huge
Let's
fight.
fight each other,
Yeah.
yeah.
It
Yeah.
does happen. Let's not pretend it doesn't, but it doesn't normally happen in the stadium like that.
No, in front of the cameras too.
Yeah.
When it's live on, public television, free to view,
Yeah.
and the whole country can see it, it's not a
Yeah.
good look. And
Yeah.
I wanted to discuss it with you because I know that it's not representative of you or Wolves either, I don't
No,
think,
it's not.
actually. The
No.
first few times I went to Wolves, I found it quite a dangerous place. But I've been every year the last few years, and it's been good as gold. You have a drink in the city, they can hear your accent, obvious. It's not a
Yeah.
problem.
Yeah.
It's fine. I don't think it's representative of either club. I just think both clubs had a bad day because of the rivalry.
I think so too, yeah.
It will be, we'll probably kick off at 7 a.m. when you play each other next year in the Prem, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guys, thank you both so much. I thoroughly enjoyed that. Anything you want to plug before we go? Any further reading or content on West Brom or anything like that?
No, I don't think so. Just watch this space. See, let's see what happens.
We shall. We'll be
Yeah.
watching you in the playoffs, I'm near certain. Good
Yeah.
luck to both of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll be back with my Ask James stream tomorrow, guys. It's a slightly later time than usual. It's going to be at 3 p.m. UK time if you want to ask me any questions on that. Other than that, just leaves me to say thanks so much to Gemma and to Harrison. Good luck, guys. Cue music, please. Man child.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.